Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.
Sponsored by Virgin Mobile. We'll tell you when your phone is paid off. Virgin Mobile. Bring on amazing.
Warning.
The following item is not recommended for little ears.
Because it's time for a dose of sex therapy with Rachel Cook.
Yay! We haven't even started yet. Focus, Jen. Focus. It's sex therapy time as always. This is a little ears warning. Remember, you can catch this chat on our podcast after the show. This week, it's time to talk about touch and why it matters. I am delighted to be joined by our resident sex and relationship therapist, Rachel Cook. Good morning.
Hiya, Jen. I thought I was out the door there before I started.
You're hitting the wrong buttons and all. I'm having one of those weeks. Do you know what I mean? But you're here. I'm delighted. And this is an interesting one, isn't it?
It is. It is. There's lots to talk about.
Lots to talk about. So what is touch starvation?
It's also called skin hunger. And this is a neurological phenomenon, which is basically the longing for human touch. You know, we have a biological need for touch. And this has obviously been sort of turbocharged by the pandemic and all the ways that it's changed touch. But, you know, we're also living in an increasingly technology focused, socially disconnected world. So we're touching each other much less than before. And basically, we feel skin hunger when we notice a kind of a discrepancy between the amount of touch that we want and the amount of touch that we're actually getting.
Gotcha.
So actually, the signals are very similar to, you know, sort of regular food hunger. We notice it. We usually only notice it when we're not getting enough.
Touch so important?
Oh, it's so important. You know, this touch is why babies in neonatal intensive care units are placed on their parents' naked chests. It's the reason that prisoners in solitary confinement often report craving human contact as much as being sort of free. You know, basically, when you touch the skin, it stimulates pressure sensors under the skin that send messages to something called the vagus nerve in the brain. And so it basically slows down the nervous system, the heart rate, blood pressure decreases, your brain waves show relaxation, levels of stress hormones such as cortisol are decreased. And touch also releases oxytocin, which is the love hormone, which is released during sex and childbirth, you know, and that's to bond us together. So basically, human touch is biologically very good for you, and it makes people feel much calmer, happier and more sane. And we particularly need touch in childhood. It's almost as powerful as the basic necessities like food and water, which is amazing, you know. And basically, without touch, we deteriorate very, very quickly. Our brains and nervous systems are designed to make it a pleasant experience because we're social animals. So, you know, of course, with the pandemic, with social distancing, that's changed things a lot.
Yeah. How serious has it been for people living alone during the pandemic?
Oh, it's been desperate, Jen. You know, people in all sorts of situations are, you know, have struggled, whatever kind of circumstances they're in. But people previously who were pretty happily living alone, I've seen people have, you know, just really descend into being severely depressed and anxious from having so little touch, where before it might have been, you know, simple hugs here and there, petting people's dogs, holding people's baby friends, babies, things like that. But now, without any of that, a lot of people, you know, really, really, really struggled.
Besides COVID, has the Me Too movement changed the way people touch?
Oh, it definitely has. You know, I think that, you know, there's obviously some excellent sides to that. But one downside is, and it's, in some ways, it's a small but serious downside, is that people are overall touching less. You combine that with being more technologically focused. And, you know, it's also a cultural thing. In certain countries, people touch a lot more. And, you know, tend to have sort of bigger families. And also it can be to do with all sorts of things relating to, you know, socioeconomic status. Sometimes you're going to have more people living in one home together because they simply couldn't afford to live alone or just the two of them. So you're just likely to have a lot more touch. So it provides that sort of community sense of this very biological need that we haven't evolved past needing touch. So even though we might generally be kind of cognitively and emotionally okay with living alone or not having much touch, you can still really see the impacts of it, you know. And it's not just people living alone, but also then we've got, you know, teens and young adults who often, you know, in adolescence, people are often touching less because they're going through puberty. And then you also have the elderly, you know, being very lonely can really, you know, surface in later life as friends and family members die off. So, you know, one study found that lonely people aged, you know, who are over 50, were twice as likely to die as their non-lonely peers.
Oh, so, God, you know, that is so sad. And you see that. You see that when old people, some old people live alone and they just deteriorate much quicker.
Exactly. You know, exactly that, Jen. After early childhood, the older you are, the more fragile you are physically. So contact becomes increasingly important for, you know, health and well-being. And then we've also got men, you know, where men have traditionally, societally, only really been allowed to experience touch through sports to a degree, their partners and a little bit their kids. So, you know, they're just and basically only been allowed to experience the comfort, pleasure and intimacy of touch through sex, which is a huge problem. You know, when we see that, like, approximately 1 in 5 men have no close friends, possibly even more than that. And, you know, I think this is also, I remember back at the start years ago, Jen, when we started doing this, we were talking about how, you know, do men actually have a much higher sex drive than women?
Yeah.
And the research seems to show that no, they don't. It's simply that men have not been allowed and encouraged to have touch outside of sex. So understandably, often their, you know, their need for touch gets channeled into, you know, sex. The sexual realm.
Yeah, exactly. Of course. So what are the signs of being touch starved?
Oh, so you have things like, you know, you might have difficulty sleeping. That's a big one. Feeling empty, hopeless or worthless, lack of enjoyment in things that you used to enjoy. It could be things like your brain just never stops, that you're feeling really anxious and you're constantly thinking. Maybe the person is using alcohol, drugs or certain behaviours or activities like porn to numb themselves. So I'm not saying all of this is necessarily only that you're touch starved. But I think when you really look at your life, and especially over the course of the pandemic, and check, you know, think about how much touch you're getting, and, you know, not just receiving, but giving as well, because actually touch benefits the person who's doing the touching just as much as it does the person who's being touched, because it's really about your skin being moved. So, yeah, there's lots of ways.
And what if you don't particularly like being touched? You know, those people, I mean, can you still be touch starved?
You actually can. You know, definitely some people are quite touch aversive or avoidant. And that can be to do with, you know, some people who are on the autistic spectrum or certain kinds of neurodivergence, neurodiversity. But I would say that, you know, it's almost no one who's going to want no touch at all. It might just be that in certain sorts of, you know, in certain situations, someone might need more of a sense of trust or a setup of the situation in order to give or receive touch. But yeah, definitely there are different amounts for different people. There is no like one set amount of touch that, you know, each person should be having.
But if you feel you're not getting enough, what can you do about it?
Oh, there's loads of things, actually, you know, because even though we're talking about human touch a lot, really, you know, it doesn't have to be only other people. So pets is a big one. You know, touching a pet, whether that's your own or one that you borrow or someone else's, that's a great way. Masturbation, of course.
Masturbation. Oh, I knew it!
Get some touch.
We can't, you know, get through a segment without you mentioning masturbation. There it
no,
is.
We've
okay.
moved on from lube to having an old go at yourself, definitely. Mm. And then you've got massage, you know, actually whether that's like paying for a massage when that's, you know, allowed based on restrictions, but you can also massage yourself, having things like long baths, exfoliating, wrapping yourself up in blankets, getting your nails and hair done. You know, that can be a big one, actually. Learning to dance with a partner, or even doing these, like, of course, it's not the same doing dance classes over Zoom as it would be doing them in person. But even just having a sense of like, being able to be around people in that way can help. And then we also have things like cuddle parties, which haven't totally taken off in Ireland, but they're really big in certain countries where people actually go and pay, or sometimes don't pay. But, you know, that there's kind of these places that you can go to basically either cover yourselves in oil and slide around together or just hug each other. And enjoy doing that. So
which brings me on to my next question. Rachel, no shame here, but who's getting off on this? I mean, are there sexual kinks and fetishes around this?
Oh, there's loads. We've got the obvious ones like foot fetishes and then sort of body worship in general. And then we have some interesting ones like trypsilagnia, which is arousal from getting your hair washed. specifically getting your hair shampooed, which is interesting. That's called Trixolac.
Oh, God, I've never heard of that. I get it. Yeah.
And then we have ones like not specifically around touch, but involve a lot of touch, like adult baby stuff, you know, which is called paraphilic infantilism. It's also called autonepiophilia. So that's basically when people want to be treated like a baby and be fed and, you know, have all sorts of things.
Wear
nappies. Might want to wear a nappy. Yeah. Or have a soother, all sorts of things. And then one that you might not love, I quite like this one, is called oculolictus, which you might be able to guess.
I don't mind the sound of it, but go on.
It's the erotic practice of licking eyeballs.
Oh, Jesus Christ. Rachel, seriously, licking, if somebody came near me, eyeball, I think I'd vom. That's a really odd one.
Yeah, and it's actually, I mean, it's not as rare as you would think that some people will find that extremely intimate and enjoy that a lot. But anyway, you know, these are all, you know, they're specifically things that people might get into or enjoy for whatever reason. But there are other ways to think about how touch that some of us might find really disgusting or just not understand at all can be, you know, could be a real turn on to someone else.
Yeah. Can touch starvation happen to people who are married or in a relationship?
Definitely. You know, I think I see this more and more when people are beginning to feel disconnected from each other or resentful. Maybe they've been arguing a lot. And so, you know, also people in relationship, it's very rare you're going to find that both people have the exact same needs for touch. Overall, in general, how much they like touch, but also what kinds of touch. And also, of course, this can change over time. You know, it could be to do with the amount of stress someone's experiencing, hormones, being touched out from having children, where you might normally be a very affectionate person. But if you have a child hanging out of your boob all day, then, you know, you're probably not going to want to be touched as much by your partner. So it's one that has to be discussed because otherwise, you know, almost certainly you're going to end up with one person feeling sort of suffocated and one person feeling not cared about and abandoned. So, you know.
Yeah, so what can you do, like, if you have mismatched needs for touch with your partner?
Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Then you need to touch about it, to talk about it, to sit down and literally discuss, like, what kinds of touch fill you up the most? You know, is that holding hands? Is it back rubs? Is it getting a foot rub? Is it being able to have someone play with your hair? You know, is it having hugs? Some people really love a good long cuddle in the morning. For some people, it makes so much difference to be skin to skin, like naked doing it. And for some people, it doesn't matter to them whether they're clothed or not. So most of us just haven't in any way really thought about this consciously. So it can be a great one to sit down, you know, both separately and together and discuss the types of touch that you really like and that you find the most sort of nourishing, so that then you can work out where the overlap is between you and also be better at being able to ask for what you need, so that, you know, respectfully, sometimes the other person might be like, no, I'm not up for, you know, the obvious one might be like, I'm not up for having sex right now. But you might still be up for a cuddle, or you know, you might be up for oral sex instead of penetrative sex or whatever. So it's one to definitely discuss, rather than feeling like you're, you know, disconnected from your partner because you feel like they're absolutely all over you and really clingy and you're finding it really gross, or that you feel like they just don't give a shite about you, and then, you know, that's awful.
And obviously worth exploring for everyone, really, this one, because it sounds like it just benefits our total well-being.
It definitely does. And when you recognize, you know, as I come into contact with people all the time who feel absolutely ashamed that this, you know, is a need for them. They feel embarrassed. It makes them feel very vulnerable, you know, and especially having to ask, especially if you have any friends who are living alone, talking to them about this, because often it's very difficult for the person themselves to say, I'm really desperate for a hug. Would you mind giving me a hug? You know, it can feel embarrassing. So just thinking about the people, especially those, it could be, you know, men, elderly people, adolescents, you know, probably adolescents are not particularly going to want to hug you, but it might be a good one to just, like, broach with them and talk to them and say, like, I'm here if you want, you know. We can figure out how we might do that together.
Yeah, exactly. Rachel Cook, thank you so much for joining us today, and I'll talk to you next week.
See you, Jen.
Bye, love. Rachel Cook, psychotherapist and mental health consultant. She is amazing, talking about touch today. And you can follow Rachel on Instagram at Rachel Jane Cook with an E on the end. She will be back next week. And if you have a topic, doesn't always have to be about sex, it can be about relationships, that you would like us to put to her, she's amazing. You can get in touch with the team 24/7, jen@rc.ie. And please do let us know if a lack of touch is something you've experienced during the pandemic. It's completely natural and understandable too. So we'd love to hear from you. You can text me 51552. We'll be right back.
Jennifer Zamparelli on 2FM.